About favorites. I mean, there's one by a band called the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. That is a quilt. Just the whole album cover is just a quilt.
It'd be sweet if they released a cloth version.
Yeah. It's their self-titled debut.
Okay.
So it's just actually called the Ozark Mountain Daredevil.
Yeah, I like that. Looks cozy.
Yeah, it does.
Nice little snuggly album cover. Folks, welcome to episode 8 of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
Jay, give us an explanation about what today's show is about.
So today, we are going to talk about a handful of albums whose album sleeve art was designed by a company called Hipgnosis from England. Hipgnosis is spelled H-I-P-G-N-O-S-I-S.
What in particular made you want to make this the theme today?
So Hipgnosis does a couple of my favorite album covers just anyway. Consists primarily of two guys from Cambridge, Storm Thorgerson and Aubrey Powell. They dissolved in 1983. Anyway, they've been around for a really, really long time. They started doing album covers in 1968 with Pink Floyd's Saucer Full of Secrets.
Like, their album covers are kind of different, but I feel like there's a general aesthetic to them.
There is. A lot of it early was photography kind of based, so they'd have like weird stuff with like an actual photograph, so a lot of kind of surreal stuff, manipulated stuff, using all sorts of things. Like, for example, the one of the ones we're going to talk about today, they used a fisheye lens so they could capture an image that was really cool. Kind of did some early photoshopping stuff too, but a lot of, like I said before, it's a lot of photography based art.
The first one,
10cc, it's Deceptive Bends, came out May of 1977 on Mercury Records. It's 10cc's fifth studio album, but it is the first album. So 10cc, if you don't know anything about 10cc, they're an English band, kind of art rock kind of band. It started basically with two songwriting teams, so two duos, and eventually they split, and this album is the first album after that split.
Did the others form any other band?
They did. So they actually, it's their names. It's Godley and Cream. Okay. So it was two songwriting duos. So Kevin Godley and Lul Cream were one team.
What a
they
name.
Lul, L-O-L. And they did very, very artistic stuff. It's kind of, you know, very, very art rock sounding stuff. The other team is Graham Goldman and Eric Stewart are the other two. And they were more the pop side of things. So early 10cc is really a blend of those two teams writing different songs together. So this is actually the first 10cc album with Stewart and, just said his name, Goldman. Yeah, Stewart, yeah. Goldman. So it's Eric Stewart and Graham Goldman. And that's one, actually kind of one of the things they said when they came out with this, because people were skeptical they were going to be able to maintain the popularity and quality of earlier 10cc. They thought it was going to be 5cc. So that was their goal, to kind of set out and show that they could still do it.
Welcome to 10cc's.
Yeah. So let's talk about, so this album cover obviously is designed by Hipgnosis. They all are today. Let's talk about it though. So on the front, in a circular, it's kind of funny. It's actually an ellipse, or at least the white frame around it is an ellipse, mm-hmm. But it's an image of a pier. So there's a guy in an old, super old fashioned diving suit. One of the old ones where you've got the hose connected to it, pumping air into the suit from the surface. A couple other guys behind him coming up a ladder onto the pier. And then he's carrying a soaking wet gal in a red dress who is obviously drowned or unconscious or something. It's actually a photograph. It's pretty, pretty sweet.
The album cover is kind of, the guy wearing the very antiquated diving suit. It felt very 10,000 Leagues.
It is. And it's funny too, because I feel it kind of is, because her dress is modern. It's a modern dress. So it's kind of odd that they're coming out of the ocean in these really antiquated diving suits, carrying this woman who's in a very nice looking new kind of red dress. So I really like this one. And I even kind of said to, when I was thinking about this, I might be in the minority on that, just in general population, but I like it. It's there's a lot of variety to it, a lot of weirdness, a lot of interesting vocals. The whole thing is just kind of interesting to me.
Very first track, was that Good Morning Judge?
Yep. It's a weird little funky song. Some sweet little guitar playing, some fun lyrics. It's a guy standing in front of a judge saying, you know, hey, how's it going? Saying he didn't do it. He wasn't there. He would never do it. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I mean, the lyrics on a lot of these songs kind of crack me up. So I like that one. The Things We Do for Love, obviously that's going to be a little bit of a slow jam based on the title.
Yeah.
Kind of cheesy. I like that one too. I like the backup vocals on that one. Marriage Bureau Rendezvous is next. That one cracked me up. So that's a song about guy going down to the marriage bureau, which I assume is like a place that tries to match you up with a mate. Sounds like he's filling out a form and answering questions on that form about what he wants in a mate. And there are some really pretty funny lyrics in that one. You know, oh, I'll be stinking so good, like I'm drowning in a sea of cologne, like that kind of stuff.
Did places like that exist, or was that a made up thing?
I feel like they had to have before you had like online dating and all that crap. There had to have been like something like this where people are going down, filling out forms and they're matching them up.
Yeah, that's astonishing. I've never really thought about whatever the analog version of eHarmony is. Like that was it.
This. Yeah. Yes. Marriage Bureau.
Absolutely nuts to think about. I know there were classified ads and like seeking this and seeking that, but man, what a phenomenal scheme.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it's, you know, the first verse is actually him just like kind of resigning himself to it, which is kind of cracks me up too. He's just like, you know, it's been a long time. I'm tired of messing around with it. I'm getting old. I need to do something about it. I'm coming down to the marriage bureau and it's, you know, I'm sitting across the table from you. It cracked me up. And that's one thing about this whole album, actually. There are this, the weirdness, the funny lyrics, the weird artsy music, it just cracks me up. So last two on side A, People in Love. That's a slow jam, baby. That's one to pull your little honey close to you and dance it out. And then Modern Blues Man, a little bit of variety there. I like the vocals in that one, and I thought the name fit because it's kind of a modern artsy take on a blues song.
Yeah, yeah, they kind of rust things up a little bit. I didn't mind that.
So next one on the, I guess, lead off track on side B, Honeymoon with B Troop. Thoughts on that, bad boy?
Do you know what B Troop, do you know what that is, what they're talking about?
I have no idea.
Oh, dang. Okay.
I don't. I really don't. It cracked me up, though. I mean, that it's a funky little slick tune. I love the choppy lyrics in the verses. My baby goes topless and brings her beauty to a bottomless day. Like that's, I like that. It cracks me up. And there's a slick little guitar solo in that one too. And some good keys. That's the thing. There's just a lot of variety on this album, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but yeah. There's all kinds of different songs on here. Next I bought a flat guitar tutor. That's a really weird little slow one, short, but it cracked me up because all the lyrics were musical kind of references. It's a little jazzy song, but you know, I bought a flat, diminished responsibility. You're a ninth person to see to be suspended in the seventh major catastrophe. That's the first few lines of the song. So that's like all sorts of music terms just jammed into this weird little song. I mean, it cracked me up. It's kind of stupid, but it cracked me up.
The next one then has to be You've Got a Cold.
It is. Yes.
That one, I desperately wish I knew, like, if this was a metaphor or something, because it's so literal.
Dude, so it's hilarious that the very first line of my notes, I think this is literally a song about someone being told that they have a cold. Like, I honestly think it is pure literal.
Your nose is running and your eyes are red. Your head is aching. You'd better be in bed. From the bottom of your fever to the throbbing in your toes, you've got a cold. You've got a cold. And then it goes on to talk about hot toddies and warm blankets. Like, it's a very
The last verse. The last verse cracks me up. Foreign bodies in your Kleenex. You've got no taste at all. While your system is dying, the bugs are having a ball. You've got a beauty, a badass, the mother of them all. You've got a cold. You've got a cold. I liked it. Just cracked me up. I honestly think it's literally a song about telling somebody they have a cold. I can't. I was looking for hidden meanings in there and stuff. I couldn't find anything.
I was definitely overthinking it. But then, like you, I eventually got to the point where I was like, I'm pretty sure this is just about a cold.
So, last song on the album is Feel the Benefit, which is kind of a multi-part song. Bunch of different parts. It's, I don't remember how long it is. Pretty long. 15 it's like minutes 11 or something. Minutes, yeah, it's getting out there. So, any thoughts on that, bad boy?
I really like the strings on this, actually, when they came in. I wish they had done more that sounded like the portions of the song that included the strings. It really matured a lot of their sound, I felt like.
Yeah, and again, there's so much variety just within the song. It is a three-part song, but you're right. The strings were great. I just like the whole thing, honestly. The whole album, I don't know. It's one of those that I can listen to again soon just because of the amount of variety actually on the album itself. And I would not get bored listening to it.
One thing that I thought was really interesting. So this was recorded in Strawberry Studios. And there were some unbelievable albums recorded in that studio. Sister of Mercy's Floodland. The Smiths' self-titled debut, GBH's Midnight Madness and Beyond, and speaking of Joy Division again, Unknown Pleasures was actually recorded there. Yeah, it's a really fascinating, because I think 10cc recorded most of their stuff there and gave them a lot of business, and then like these few random up-and-coming indie acts were able to afford it as well.
See, that's one I didn't know, so that's interesting to hear.
You got any final thoughts?
Not especially. I mean, I kind of already said it. I like this album, but...
What does 10cc mean?
I don't know. I used to know, but I don't remember what it means. It's something to do with... I feel like bodily fluids for some reason. Yeah, I honestly think it's something along those lines, but... I don't want to besmirch the good name of 10cc if that's not true, but for some reason I had a feeling it's something to do with that.
Okay.
So next on the line here, we've got Alan Parsons Project. The name of the album is iRobot. It's the second studio album by the Alan Parsons Project. It was released on the 1st of June, 1977 on Arista Records.
Real quick. Sorry. I'm going to rewind.
Back it up.
So apparently this is a false claim, but you're right about bodily fluid with 10cc. Right, it's a rumor. The claim is 10cc was named because the term represents the amount of semen in an average male ejaculation.
So it's not that.
It's not that, but somehow that rumor has caught hold for the last 40 some years.
I wonder if that's factually correct.
So yeah, sorry, Alan Parsons Project.
Alan Parsons Project. Are you familiar with the Alan Parsons Project?
Yeah, so I was actually having flashbacks to a freshman year English class I took where I wrote about Alan Parsons' The Raven. So it's from an album that's based on Edgar Allan Poe's work. We had to write a paper on something that was music related. I don't even remember now. I did horrible on the paper, like probably rightly so because I hated that class. But it's pretty much just Alan Parsons going full tilt with an Edgar Allan Poe slant. Like, it's wild. I still have a soft spot for The Raven in spite of my D+ paper or whatever it was.
That's awesome. So it's funny you say that, too, because Tales of Mystery and Imagination, that's the debut album. That's the one The Raven's on. This is their second album. It's called iRobot. And the reason I think that's funny is this one is actually based conceptually on author Isaac Asimov's robot stories.
Another Do you know one if that, all their albums were like that and that they had literary?
It certainly seems like a trend. Certainly seems like a trend. I know their next one is called Pyramid, and it's centered on the pyramids of Giza. So not literary necessarily, but historic.
Yeah. So yeah.
So this is iRobot.
This album cover is pretty dope.
It is. So those are some hypnosis assistants coming down the tubes. They look like tubes, but it's actually at Terminal 1 in Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris.
Okay.
And then so it's these guys coming down these tubes looking at this giant robot with like an atom inside of its head. Yeah. And the robot is old school photoshopped on there. So it's like superimposed onto this photograph.
Yeah, I like this cover a lot.
I do too.
Like, it's serious and kind of ominous and futuristic, but at the same time, it's kind of fun and doesn't take itself too seriously.
It is. And another thing that cracked me up about this, so if it's a gatefold, so you can open, you know, it opens like a book. And on the inside is a picture of Alan Parsons with his head in the exact same positioning as the robot. So it's almost like it's him. It's funny too, because if you close it, it lines up perfectly too, but it's kind of cool. Looking like a little bit older Luke Skywalker, Alan Parsons is in this one.
Yeah, and like the robot's eyes are a little sad.
Yeah, he's a little sad robot. Alan Parsons Project, not really a band. It's kind of two guys. Mm. Alan Parsons, obviously, and then Eric Wolfson. And then they have a variety of session and studio musicians who join them on different things. And some of them, you know, are pretty consistent. This guy did a couple albums with them. This guy did a couple albums with them or whatever. But the core is really just Alan Parsons and Eric Wolfson. So they combine for almost all of the Alan Parsons Project catalog. They're almost credited, both of them, on every single song.
Okay.
So first one off the jump is iRobot, which is an instrumental track. There's a few instrumental tracks on this one. That reminds me of being a little kid. And I'll tell you why, because my dad had a couple Alan Parsons Project albums, including this one. And I remember him putting that on and listening to that. It may have been the first music of this style that I had ever heard in my life.
It's funny you mention that, because I had a note to ask you later on if your dad was into prog and this type of sound, or how you got introduced to it. So
anyway, did you have any notes on that one at all?
It's ominous. It's groovy. It's got like a digifunk. I don't know it's like a very digital funk sound. It's a little menacing. You kind of don't know what's lurking around the corner. It's a good intro.
I wouldn't want to be like you. Probably, if there is a well-known track on this album, that's it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of their most famous. That's one of the notes I have.
Yeah, it's a real funky one. It really gets the feet moving. So the vocalist on that is a guy named Lenny Zakatek. He's one of their regulars. So he's on a few other Alan Parsons Project songs. If you've heard Games People Play, he's on that one too.
You know, yeah, that one. Lenny just coming for the bangers.
So that one's got a pretty good solo. And then when he comes back in after the solo, it's pretty hopping and skipping. That's my new term that's going to take off.
We're swinging.
It's hopping and skipping, baby.
I also kept thinking about how I feel like I need a light show to fully appreciate it.
Yeah, I can see that too, especially because you got the synth sounds and that sort of stuff. So for sure. You know, one thing I would say that I was kind of thinking while I was listening to this is the fact that it is session musicians. It's different people on every song. So, you know, there's different vocalists on each one of these songs, which, a lot like the 10cc album, one of the reasons I like it is there's a lot of variety on this. Mm-hmm. I mean, some other time, that's the third song on the album, it's a duet. So I like the freedom that having different studio musicians provides them with the different stuff they can do.
Yeah, for sure. Don't Let It Show, a very tender track. The voice, that was one that, I mean, they really got their money's worth on that wah-wah bar. Like,
he's gonna get you.
Yeah, it checks every 70s prog box. It's got those keys, the wah-wahs. It's got the talk box. It's got some dank bass grooves. Yeah, it's...
Real quick, the fifth song on the album, Don't Let It Show, the one you said is like a slow jam, but that one had this weird, long, kind of peppy musical outro after a really slow song.
It's like kind of sleeping solemn, and then it just smacks itself in the face and kind of wakes up very quickly towards the end.
Song Nucleus. That was such a weird little instrumental song. It's like floating on an electric wave, I said.
Yeah, it felt like the original Cosmos with Carl Sagan.
Yeah, it was sparkly. It was a cool little instrumental song. Next one.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say
that one.
That one would be really cool to see in like a planetarium.
You know, the laser beams are just flying through the galaxy or something. That would be pretty sick. Next one's Day After Day. Dancing little tones behind some cool vocals. Speaking of grabbing me, the next one on this album is Total Eclipse. That's the one with the choral orchestra piece with really haunting vocals.
I don't know if I necessarily follow the story, but it definitely felt like we're meeting our end.
This is going to be quite the tangent. So, Eclipse. It's called Total Eclipse. And this album is based on some Isaac Asimov robot stories. But he's got another little short novelette called Nightfall. There is a planet where it's always light out, and they have historical data that every 2,000 years, I think it is, society just destroys itself. And they're coming up on that 2,000-year anniversary, and some scientists discover that at some point they're going to have some sort of planetary alignment or something that will cause the planet to be dark for the first time in 2,000 years for 7-8 hours. When the darkness hits, it's not the darkness actually that makes everyone lose their shit, and it makes them realize how insignificant they are in the universe. They burn down the entire civilization. They just burn down everything.
Does that happen every 2,000 years?
Yes. So there's historical evidence that they're finding that they know the civilization is going to destroy itself, and they don't know why. It's pretty wild. But it being an Asimov story, and this song being called Total Eclipse, Mom, I wonder if it had any bearing on it, because it certainly feels like it.
That's a really cool concept.
Anyway, I like that one a lot. And then it seamlessly transitions into the final track, which is Genesis chapter 1, verse 32. Kind of interesting, because in the actual book of Genesis, there are 31 verses in chapter 1.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you thought there was some kind of significance to it, like after God created all of this and rested. Did God come back and create robots, or did man come back and create robots?
I don't know. I don't philosophize that.
Do you have anything else about this?
Not especially. I mean, again, I like the variety. I think it's worth the $3 I paid for it.
That's not a bad deal at all, especially for that sweet cover. I mean, the cover's almost frameable.
Yeah, it is. I wish I still had. So in my old house, I had a spot on the wall where I could put 8 albums, kind of 4 on top, 4 on the bottom for display purposes. And I would put like different themes up there and stuff, like animals or debut albums or whatever. And this is definitely one that I would want to put on display because it's cool to tell.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So next up on the list today is the album Straight Between the Eyes by the band Rainbow. This is Rainbow's 6th studio album. It came out the 10th of June, 1982, on Mercury Records.
This is one of Hypnosis's last pieces of work, I think.
Really? I mean, it would make sense. It's getting towards the end of the lifespan. Yeah, you're right. It is. So this got a close-up of a person's face. It's all drawn. It's not a photograph this time. And they have a guitar crashing through their T-zone. Their face is shattering, and they've got a rainbow in the corner of one of their eyes.
Gotta take care of the T-zone, fellas.
Oily ass T-zone might cause a guitar to smash through your face. So I'll tell you why I bought this. Rainbow is a band that was founded by former Deep Purple guitarist Ritchie Blackmore. It also, in the original early versions of Rainbow, the lead vocalist was Ronnie James Dio, who I freaking love. And I bought this at that record auction I talk about in Lawrence. You're flying through all the albums because it's a mad dash. It caught my eye because, hey, Rainbow, and the album cover is kind of cool. I was hoping it was Ronnie James Dio era Rainbow when I bought it. not knowing it wasn't. Yeah. So we'll just go in with that information.
I actually made a similar note. I said that I was all pumped when I saw Rainbow, and then I realized it was post-Dio Rainbow. Do you know if, like a rainbow in the dark, was that about Rainbow?
I don't think so, but how could it not be?
Yeah, that's
maybe it is, but no, Ronnie James Dio kicks ass.
Yeah.
So let's kind of dive in here. Death Alley Driver, that's the lead-off track. Can feel some Deep Purple influence on this one. Pretty repetitive.
Yeah, to me it sounded very Deep Purple and very Foreigner. I mean, really, I think a lot of the album sounds like Foreigner to me. The video, though, for Death Valley Driver, I'll send it to you, but it is a riot.
So does it have anything to do with, like, a Sega game?
Yeah, like, it's clearly set in the early 80s, but there's a car that looks like it's from the 30s. Chasing a guy on a motorcycle. The band is playing on the side of the road for some reason. They're even playing at a cemetery at some point. And I don't think it's a set cemetery. I'm almost positive it's a real cemetery. It's interlaced with, yeah, those like video game graphics. It is just so kooky. And I think Death is the person in the car. I don't know. It's ridiculous.
I'm in. I'm looking forward to it. I think I've seen it before. Obviously, I remembered some Nintendo-y type things, but I'm looking forward to revisiting it. Stone Cold. I like the organ on that one. Again, it's not super complicated with a little bit more Foreigner than the first one.
There's a solo in it, and it kind of seems like somebody got lost playing it. It kind of sounded like me playing Rock Band, like they forgot what they were doing and hit the blue notes and yellow notes too late.
Just clicking and clacking, just slapping that plastic guitar all to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Though it is obvious to me that that's going to be the single off of this album. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Moving into the rest of this thing, maybe not a good sign when my favorite two songs on your album are the first and second song, and then it's all downhill from there. Next one we got, Bring On The Night, Dream Chaser.
Yeah.
That one's a kind of a galloping little song. I did like the solo. Got some phaser on the guitar.
Yeah, I said it's not good, but it's kind of good, you know?
Next song, Tight Squeeze. That's more of a strutter. Give me that tight squeeze.
Yeah.
I like the guys. This is the one song on here where I was like, I like this guy's vocals. Joe Lynn Turner is the vocalist's name. Shout out to my boy, Joe Turner. But getting into side B here. First two songs on the B-side. First one's Power. It's the most cheese dick 80s montage shit that you could ever imagine.
Like, yeah, it sounds like it was written by a screenwriter.
Exactly. You know, freaking Danielson is putting the wax on the car and doing kicks on the beach or whatever. Like, two songs I didn't like, followed by Rock Fever. You got anything to say about Rock Fever?
When I saw that name, I was like, I know exactly what this is going to sound like. And it did.
Some of the worst damn lyrics I've ever heard in my life. Let me see you rock. Let me see you roll. Let me see you burn. Rock fever.
It just sounds so phoned in.
It's funny. I text Joey while I was listening to this. And I mentioned the fact that Rolling Stone gave this thing 1.5 stars. As I was taking notes for side A, I said, you know, fuck Rolling Stone. This thing's definitely a 2-star album at least. Then side two hit. And I tend to kind of fall in line with Rolling Stone's evaluation with this bad boy.
Made me feel like if I was, I don't know, like I should be in a fight where I'm hitting somebody with chains.
Sick. That made me think of the movie Cobra. You ever seen Cobra?
No.
Dude, it's one of the dumbest Sylvester Stallone movies of all time. It's freaking hilarious.
Yeah,
he kills a guy with like a meat hook that's like on a chain or something. Like he swings it and it like hooks this dude. And like, I don't know. It's ridiculous. He kills a ton of people in that movie. I think the body count on that movie is pretty damn high. He wears sunglasses the whole time. I think he's got a big ass gun with a cobra on the handle. Like it's terrible, but it's
great. I'm seeing the poster for it now and he's putting off a very strong George Michael vibe.
Yeah. Does he have the shades on? And fourth up today is going to be Yes, the band Yes. Going For The One is the name of the album. It's Yes's 8th studio album. This one came out on the 15th of July. 1977 on Atlantic Records. Like the cover a lot.
Yeah.
The album, not so much, but the cover's cool. So it's a dude. Well, let's just start out. So it's a bright blue sky with photographs of some skyscrapers in Century City, which is out. It's in LA. And then they look like a transit map, the lines on here. Mm-hmm. But then at the bottom, it's got a dude in his birthday suit from behind, just kind of staring up at the skyscrapers.
Do you know if was that someone in the band?
I don't think so. I think it's just a dude with his ass out, but I could be wrong.
I'm not going to lie. Like, that's pretty toned little bottom on this.
He's fit. He's fit. Yeah. People in the 70s were more fit than people are now. I will say that. So
yeah, they've got that little loose curl. I don't know. Maybe I'll redo it for our podcast album cover.
I'm going to be going for the one for Christmas or for Halloween. Christmas, what the hell? I get kicked out of the family for that. Saturnalia. So that's going for the one. So let's dive into this bad dog. Album cover, very good album.
I mean, I basically have no notes on this. I have something for Parallels, but other than that.
Let's go through it real quick. So song one is the title track. It's just too many damn sounds. Like, it just was frantic. Like, it was all over the place. I'm generally a big fan of prog rock, but I wanted that song to end as soon as it started. Turn of the Century's next up. The lyrical content of that one's kind of cool. It's about a sculptor whose wife dies, so he creates a stone sculpture of her, which comes to life. Mm-hmm. So that's cool lyrics.
It's cookie cutter prog to me.
And it's still a little bit all over the place. It's almost like the vocals and the music don't sync up. Sometimes. Yeah. It's like syncopated and weird. I couldn't get in the flow. And I love prog. Honestly, I love prog. But side A, this thing, not my jam.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because this is their eighth studio album, like you said. Eighth. And right. It was this disjointed. I don't understand how you can get to that point and put something so haphazard out.
I wonder what band has the best eighth album. Like, best debuts. Who's got the best eighth studio album out there? Side B kicks off with Wondrous Stories. Probably my favorite song on the album. Good synth, good harmonies on that one. The percussion's good. I did like that one a little bit. The last song on the album is your classic 15-minute long prog song. Lots of movements, lots of different things. The organ was good in that one, the kind of big towering organ. Still definitely a wall of sound in a lot of places, but it wasn't as overwhelming as the other tracks. I did enjoy the last... I like side B of this thing. Side A, I just could not get in the flow with it. Let's move on to another kind of prog album, but one that I absolutely adore. So final one up today is Animals by Pink Floyd. This is Pink Floyd's 10th studio album. It was released on the 21st of January, 1977 on Columbia Records in the United States.
Man, another 77. That's nuts.
I didn't even notice. That's awesome. That's pretty crazy. Hypnosis had done a lot of the band's previous album covers going back a long time. So they did the two before this, which are maybe two of the more famous Pink Floyd albums. You've got Dark Side of the Moon, and then Wish You Were Here is the guy on fire shaking hands with the other dude. Mm. So two pretty famous album covers. They came to Pink Floyd with three different ideas. One, really creepy. It was a small child entering his parents' bedroom while they're doing it, which is super creepy and gross. I can understand why that was rejected. Final concept for this. Despite the super creepy ideas that Hypnosis had here, the final design was actually by Roger Waters of Pink Floyd. So at the time, he lived near the Battersea Power Station, which is what's on the cover here. It's a big, old-fashioned power-generating-looking building, four big chimney stacks. They kind of tethered a giant inflatable pig between two of the towers. So they had to do it a couple different times to try to get all the shots they want. Inclement weather kind of delayed the work. So day one, they hired a marksman just in case it got away, they could shoot it down. Day two, the band's manager said, "We don't need to get a marksman for today." The balloon broke free, disappeared from view. It went through Heathrow Airport. There was a lot of canceled flights, some panics. And then eventually it landed in some guy's pasture and he got super pissed off because it scared his cows. And then finally, the third day, they took it back and got the photographs. Now, the funny part to me about all of this, the final cover here, which is really cool. It's a photograph of the Battersea Power Station with the pig there. But the final photograph here, the pig was actually old-fashioned photoshopped in there.
I didn't realize it was a real pig or an inflatable pig, I should say.
Yeah, let's talk about this bad boy. So this, I know you're not a prog guy. This is one of my favorite albums of all time. If I didn't include any Pink Floyd when we did my top 10 albums, but kicking in here, Pigs on the Wing, part one. Three really long songs bookended by one song that's split into two parts. So Pigs on the Wing, part one. It's a simple, lovely acoustic Roger Waters vocals. It's a song about his relationship at the time. Diving into Dogs here. Dogs is side two. Let me say one more thing. So the animals here, the theme of animals. It's kind of an Animal Farm type thought when they put this together. It's a commentary on society and politics in England at the time. So dogs are the people in society who are taking advantage of other people, stealing from them, snatching things away from them, being those, the dogs of society.
Was the whole album based on Animal Farm? Because I had wondered if there was that parallel.
I don't know if I would say based, but thematically speaking, it's the same. It's a similar idea. For sure.
Yep.
I love the synth and guitar solos on that song. Neither are overly complicated, but they're super clear, really lovely. There's some, actually all of these songs, the middle three anyway, there are animal noises. There's some dogs barking and it always drives my dogs insane, which cracks me up too. After that, it's got a nice, really pretty acoustic guitar part that's kind of haunting. Just in general, David Gilmour has some of my favorite solos of any guitarist out there. And so next one on this one's Pigs, three different ones. The bass playing in the intro is great. You've got some weird echoey pig sounds at the beginning. The lyrics on this thing are amazing. I love them. It's talking about people that Roger Waters considers to be kind of, you know, the top of the ladder, the ones with the wealth and power who are, you know, manipulating the rest of society, encouraging them to be competitive and violent with each other so that the pigs can stay on top. Some great bass playing on this song, which is funny because David Gilmour plays the bass on this song. It's not Roger Waters. Roger Waters is normally Pink Floyd's bass player. I love Roger Waters' bass playing, but this is David Gilmour, and it's actually really, really good to me. There's a cool little slide down the keys followed by some sick little cowbell banging, which always gets me fired up. You know, he's doing the pig noises into the voice box. I don't know. I like that one too. The outro solo on that one's a beast as well. So moving along here, you know, Sheep is song number four. Cool little key solo over some bleeding sheep, which cracks me up every time. They've got animal noises in here. One thing I did notice about this one that I really liked, I didn't like this one as much as the other songs on the album. But at the end of some of the vocalizations, Roger Waters holds the note. And then the note is cross-faded into the same note being played on the synthesizer. And it just sounds really, really wild to me. I really like that part. Now, this one does have some aggressive lyrics. You know, bleeding it. It's about, so the twist in this one is the sheep actually rise up and kill the dogs.
Yeah.
Which I liked. So, you know, bleeding and babbling, I fell on his neck with a scream. Wave upon wave of demented Avengers march cheerfully out of obscurity into the dream. So they're rising up to kill the dogs. You know, on the whole, this is one of my favorite albums. I don't think you're going to just sit down and be like, all right, I'm going to listen to 17-minute long Dogs. I'd rather just listen to the whole damn thing because it makes more sense that way than it does as individual tracks. If we don't have anything else to say about animals, I love it. Everyone should listen to it. Moving into the final segment here, didn't see that coming.
So with this, we will ask each other a question related to the topic at hand, and hopefully neither one of us can predict the question that's about to be asked.
All right, fire away.
Hypnosis, spelled HIPGNOSIS, like you said. GNO got me thinking. The Gnostics started collectively forming and spreading their ideas in the early first century as a branch of Christian and Jewish sect. Furthermore, It's often described as kind of interweaving Zoroastrianism, Platonism, Buddhism, and Hinduism. So Jay, if you were to start a religion fusing different ideas and beliefs together, what would it entail? Or if you wanted to break free of past thoughts, what would your entirely new system be?
That's heavy. So, I mean, my whole philosophy on life is treat everyone as best you can, treat everyone well as they allow you to treat them, and help out people whenever possible.
Yeah, that's awesome, I think.
Those would be my core principles. Beyond that, there, you know, we can get into the other stuff. You know, honestly, that's it, though.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful and much needed for this 7 billion plus world that we live in. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. And if it doesn't concern you, stay out of people's business, too. Yeah. So that's the third rule of Jayism. All right. So, Joey, if you were one of those individuals for whom hypnosis did have some sort of effect, you could use hypnosis to have some sort of an impact on the things you do. What would you use it for? To become hypnotized, to get rid of a bad habit, to build some good habits? If you could truly be hypnotized to do something, what would you have the person hypnotize you to do?
Oh, I don't like that, because I would be losing control in my personal will. I would say that I would probably be hypnotized to be nicer to people when I meet them the first time, because it takes me a while to warm up to people. And probably vice versa.
Mr. Good First Impression. That's what you're going to do. I like it.
Sometimes my wife is like, people don't know how to read you. And you don't hide when you dislike people very well. And I'm like,
oh. So that's funny you say that, because my wife tells me the exact same thing. I can tell that you don't like them. I'm like, yeah, okay. I hope they can tell too. Yeah. I don't like them.
That's kind of how I feel, but... Then
I'm treating them with as much respect as they have earned from me, as my ethos dictates.
Yeah, sometimes I'll be like, I thought I was hiding it well. And she's like, no, absolutely not.
No, they could tell immediately that you didn't like them.
Yeah. Oh, listener, we'll cover you. Hypnotized by this episode? Well, subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell others about us. Tell others about us. You are getting sleepy. Tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Jay and Joey Pod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee that has been aforementioned.
Tell others about us.
Tell others about us. You can find all that information and our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. And as Jay would say in his new tenets, or the tenets of his new religion, be good to each other.
Later.